Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
So glad to have you tuned in. Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. This is Connecting Faith. Ted Roth at the controls. Carissa's at the phones. And Ted, in my formative years, when I was listening to rock and roll music, yeah, when I could get away with it, when my mom wasn't changing the channel. But one of the songs that I remember having some sheet music and played it on piano by the group The Association, Cherish is the word I used to describe all the feeling that I have hiding here for you inside. You don't know how many times I wish that I told you, how many times I wish I could hold you, cherish as much as I cherish you. Remember that?
Yeah, so, is that you on keys right there?
That would not be. No, okay. No. Never really accomplished that much there. But so if we're thinking, what would happen if in our marriages, if we actually started to say the words and demonstrate by actions how much we care about our spouse, as opposed to that song says, I wish that I would have told you, or I wish that I could hold you, those things. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the topic of conversation today with best-selling author, pastor, and speaker Gary Thomas. And I don't know that we're going to talk about old 60s songs, but we are going to have a good conversation. I'm really looking forward to it. And by the way, I do have a couple of copies of Gary's new book that we'll give away at the end of the hour. So I know you're going to want to sign up for that, and we'll open up the phone lines right away so you can do that at 877-933-2484.
You can trust Gary. He and his wife, Lisa, have been married for 30 years. Right?
Yeah. So we're going to get some great insight. And of course, Gary is a best-selling author, written some 18 books, and they're all recommended reading. Talking about marriage, I came across this from Jerry Seinfeld. It says, being a good husband is like being a stand-up comic. You need 10 years before you can call yourself a beginner. So, all right. Yes. Well, Gary's got 30 in. I've got 40. You got 20. Yep. So let's jump in and find out how we can make a difference for God's glory in our marriages. Gary Thomas, writer in residence, and serves on the teaching team at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas, and author of 18 books that have sold over 1 million copies worldwide and been translated into a dozen languages. And Gary's new book is called Cherish, the one word that changes everything for your marriage. Gary, welcome back to Connecting Faith. So great to have you on.
Thank you, Neil, for having me back.
When we think about, if we're thinking about one word that's going to change everything, if it talks about marriage, the first thing that comes to mind is love. So what's the difference between cherish and love?
Well, that's what we've been talking about for just time in memoriam, but most of us, if we go back, look at our vows, and we pledge not just to love, but to cherish. I pledge to love and to cherish till death do us part. And for me, that word was kind of hiding in plain sight, if I could use that phrase, because I've always focused on love, which I think of as sacrifice, commitment, service, perseverance, hanging in there. And cherish calls us to something a little higher. It calls us to delight. It calls us to adore. It calls us to a certain mindset. It calls us to hold something precious. And just trying to aspire to something that I already promised to do. I didn't just promise to love, to hang in there, to be with her, but also to cherish her. That called me to a new level of intimacy in my marriage, a new level of engagement in my marriage. And I was just, frankly, just kind of delighted to see what happened when we began to try to make good on that promise.
You've written, a number of books, talked a lot about marriage. So as you said, it's kind of an old word, but it is something that can actually, as the subtitle says, it could change everything for your marriage?
Well, it can. It strikes me, particularly as a pastor now, doing weddings. In fact, I'm doing one coming up this weekend, how vulnerable two people are making themselves to each other. That not just their evenings and weekends and holidays, but if this person isn't true to their vows, if they become apathetic, if they become preoccupied with something else, marriage doesn't give us another chance in the sense of this is who we pledge to live our life with. And if we don't aspire after cherish, we really take away the one chance for our spouse to be cherished. And when I think of the incredible commitment my wife made to me out of the billions of people on this planet, for whatever reason, she said, I'm willing to spend this life with you. Instead of taking that for granted, instead of just accepting it as a status quo, the way things are, I just decided I want to learn to cherish this woman so that I look at her like I did on my wedding day. You know, most guys, we can remember when our bride was walking up that aisle. Again, as a pastor, it's interesting to me. It used to be when the bride would come up the aisle, every head would turn and they'd look back to see the bride. I think there have been some internet memes or some things on Facebook. I'm not sure, because now you see about 15 to 20% of people look forward to try to read the expression on the groom's face. What's he looking like? Is he crying? Is he happy? Is he smiling or whatnot? But when that bride is coming down the aisle, at that moment, she's the only woman in the world to him. Everyone else is background furniture. You could say the rest of the world is in black and white. She's in color. And I think in many ways, that's the picture of a man who really cherishes his bride. And what I want to suggest is we shouldn't settle for that being a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. That should be a goal that we have, to look at our wives that way, for wives to look at their husbands that way, and to hold them that way in our heart.
Well, in fact, you set that up well, just even talking about Adam and Eve, I mean, the sense that, you know, you are the only one for me. I mean, there is no other. That's life-altering for some people to actually think about, you know, even though we know this is an exclusive covenant, but we live in a world where a lot of times we're looking and comparing to others.
Well, that's right. That's one of the first mindsets. The first one is just accepting that I already promised to cherish. This isn't something that if my spouse is really lucky, I'll do for her. Almost all of us promise at one time, I will cherish you. The second mindset is to make good on that promise, is to go back to Adam and Eve. And some people might say, why did Adam and Eve initially have such a fantastic relationship? And you could say, well, there was no sin, and that's fair, or God was walking with them in the cool of the day, and that's entirely fair. Some guys might say, Gary, they were naked all day long. I get that. But I think another very significant factor is, for one slice in time, Adam was literally the only man in the world. Eve was literally the only woman in the world. There was no one that Adam could compare Eve to. He couldn't say, well, she's not quite as tall as Janice, or her sense of humor isn't quite as great as Shanique was, or, you know, she's not quite as curvy as someone else. She defined what a woman was for him, as he defined what a man is for her. Cherishing is all about the particular. It's all about appreciating who this person is, not faulting them because they're not like someone else. When you cherish someone, you cherish them for your uniqueness. And I hit on this part of marriage actually rather early on in mine. I remember praying early on in our marriage that God would make my wife sort of the plumb line of beauty for me. I said, let my eyes and my mind and my heart be set that she defines what a beautiful woman is to me. God answered that prayer in a powerful way. And here's what I love about this. You know, I didn't realize that when I prayed it as a guy in his early 20s. But because she's my plumb line of beauty, my view of my, I guess, the model of a beautiful woman ages with my wife. And so I get to be totally satisfied with her. She gets to be accepted and have that sense of fulfillment that her husband still fills up his eyes with her. She wins. I win. I believe God wins because he loves it when he sees his son satisfied and his daughter desired. It's a precious place to be. And what I'm saying is that we can get there when we learn to cherish.
In fact, maybe just a little side note, you talk about it a little bit later in the book, but you mentioned about, you know, this is a mindset, it's all about the particular, and you contrast that with how, you know, porn, which is so devastating to so many, has a different effect on us than just picturing our wife. In fact, I know even you have a picture of your wife in your closet when you're getting dressed.
Absolutely. I don't think the full effect of high-speed internet porn has gotten out there as far as what people know the real damage is. It literally rewires a man's brain. People can Google this or Bing this, whatever you appreciate, whatever your favorite one is, to check the research. But basically, it operates on what one person has called the Coolidge effect, where the dopamine hit in a man's brain comes from seeing something new. That's why I don't want to get too explicit here, but a porn video or picture can be used up. If a guy's seen it before, it doesn't give him the same hit. It doesn't have the same allure to him. It's always clicking on to see something new, and that's the thrill of the pursuit. Well, we can completely see how that's 180 degrees opposite of sexual intimacy in marriage, where you're faithful to one person throughout your entire lifetime. And so when you give yourself over to that activity, you're literally training your mind to find your wife less attractive, whereas a person who chooses to cherish their wife is literally training their mind to find their wife more attractive and others less attractive. Oxytocin is they call it the cuddle chemical. It makes you feel more bonded with someone. It makes you feel more connected to someone. It's released following a sexual climax. And so a man who's keeping himself for his wife, when he's with her, literally finds her more attractive than the other woman and other women less attractive. Conversely, if he's getting involved in porn, he's training his mind to find his wife less attractive and other women more attractive. Sexual taste and desire is somewhat like our taste for food. You cultivate a certain taste. If we grew up in Japan, we would have a different desire for breakfast, lunch, and dinner probably than you have if you grew up in Portland, Oregon, or Chicago, Illinois, or Houston, Texas. And so the same thing is that we can choose to create a certain taste for each other, our desire for each other, and we protect that. And when we do it, you know, this is the amazing thing. When we do it, we reach satisfaction. I've dealt with a number of men who are really struggling with the porn issue. What I've never seen in one of their souls is satisfaction. I see shame. I see regret. I see frustration. I see anger toward their wives and whatnot. I don't see satisfaction. So God's word just says, I want you to desire your wife, because when you desire your wife and you can be with your wife, you have satisfaction.
We're going to dive in more to the one word that can change everything for your marriage. We're talking cherish with the best-selling author Gary Thomas. He's, of course, written Sacred Marriage and some 18 other books, sold millions. We're honored to have him with us today on Connecting Faith. We do have two copies of Cherish to give away. Let me encourage you. This would be just another, if you've heard Gary on with Susie and Live the Promise, or been on, you know, Folks in the Family or Family Life Today, or been with us in past times in Connecting Faith, you know just how insightful and encouraging he is. And you're going to get some straight talk and some practical help. And we'll dive into some of those practical steps, ways that we can, in fact, cherish the one that we have committed ourselves to in marriage. That's all coming up in the moments ahead. But call for the sign up for a copy of the book at 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. And sign up for a copy of Cherish from Gary Thomas. More with Gary in just a moment. And if you have a question, you're welcome to join us as well. Maybe just want to brag on how your spouse cherishes you. We'd love to hear the story. It's more with Gary Thomas just ahead.
Radio.
Talking about how we can cherish our mates, the one word, cherish, the one word that changes everything for your marriage. Gary Thomas, writer in residence and teaching team pastor at Second Baptist Church in Houston, author of some 18 books, and he's been our guest in the past, and we love having him back with us, talking about his new work, Cherish. And, Gary, we're talking about these are mindset changes, but the reality is this is... is this a learned behavior, and if so, are there actually steps that we can take to change the way we've been maybe treating our spouse in the past?
There are. We've already talked about two of them. The first one is to recognize this is what I promised my spouse. I don't want to just love her in the sense of be there and not leave. I promised to have a certain mind attitude and a certain heart toward my wife or husband, whatever is appropriate. I want to cherish them. Second one is look at your husband as Adam, the only man in the world. Your wife is Eve, the only woman in the world. And then there are just a number of things that I've found that help. One is to cultivate a mind that focuses on your spouse's excellence. One thing I did for my wife this past year is I took a daily journal that had each day numbered, and every day I wrote down one thing that she did that day that I was thankful for, or something about her that I really admired and felt blessed by. It was her Christmas, one of her Christmas presents that I gave her. But, you know, the amazing, I mean, it was very meaningful to her. She actually even cried when she opened it up. She goes, "You found 365 things to say." I said, "Of course." She goes, "Even on my honorary not so nice days?" I said, "Absolutely." But here's the thing. It shaped my mind and my heart, because I don't know that I prayed for God to change my wife one time the whole year I was writing that journal. Because when you begin every day opening up a book, and you're putting in a new entry of how your spouse excels and what you're thankful for, it just starts to feel a little bit picky to say, "Well, God, she's this 200 times over, but could you change this?" It just gives you a whole new perspective and context out of which to adore and appreciate your spouse.
Like you call it showcasing your spouse, which is certainly different, I guess, from how society typically approaches a marriage relationship.
Absolutely. Showcasing is another practice I talk about. It comes from the dance community. I don't know that I've ever seen a professional ballet, but I love to read about great analogies. And there's one where George Balanchine, he's a famous Russian-born choreographer, said, "The ballet is woman." He's talking about pas de deux, which is couples dancing. And he said, the best male dancers understand that their role is to showcase the ballerina. People go to the ballet. They want to see the grace, the beauty, the loveliness of the ballerina. And so the best male dancers are there to showcase her. They're not trying to step in front of her. They're not trying to show off their muscles or their balance or their move. They realize they're there to turn her, to support her, to lift her, to catch her, so that she can do more because of him than she could possibly do on her own. And for me, that's a beautiful picture of marriage, not only husbands for wives, but wives for husbands. How do I wake up and say, I want others to see the excellence of my wife? That's a real-world understanding. We talked about cherishing is all about the particular. For an effective dancer, he has to know his partner's weaknesses, because those are the ones he's got to cover up and support. But he also has to know her great strengths, because that's what he wants to focus on. That's what he wants to emphasize. That's what he wants to get the spotlight on so that everybody can see. You know, a lot of people say, well, why would I want to do that? I want my spouse to do that for me. But Romans 12:10 takes us back to, really, I believe, this concept when it says, outdo one another in showing honor. It's such a simple verse, but it's so 180 degrees different of how we live our day. But basically, the Bible is saying, I should say at the end of the day, I've been faithful to Scripture if I have shown my spouse more honor than she has shown me. Now, usually we end the day at the reverse, saying, did they appreciate me? Did they showcase me? Did they support me? And so you might even say that if your spouse is a little self-centered, well, you're going to have an easier time fulfilling Scripture than somebody whose spouse is so supportive and encouraging and builds you up. But more than I see this as a duty, Neil, it's just been a delight. I just think a great case in point is we got this present for a young couple that had just gotten married about a year before. And I thought of it, and Lisa said, oh, that would be a great present. We got to do that. I asked her a week later, have we gotten it? She goes, no, I'll follow up. I'll get it done. But, yeah, that's a good idea. Well, the first time we saw this couple, the wife was just gushing to my wife about it. It was so thoughtful. It was generous. It was just so touching. And I walked in the room, and she's thanking her for it. And as I walk in the room, she goes, oh, and, you know, thank you too, Gary. And you know, it was one of those thank you too, like, she's saying, you and I both know you had absolutely nothing to do with this gift, that your only contribution was you married this incredibly kind and generous woman. And why, you know, to my shame, 15, 20 years ago, I'd be tempted to say, what are you talking about? I got you that gift. I paid for it. It was my idea. But now why would I say, what gift? And it's, why would you do that? Well, I love to see somebody celebrate my wife now. I want her to be showcased. And then why would my wife step in? Oh, don't be silly, Gary. You know that gift was your idea. And people say, why would a married couple act like that? Well, both Lisa and I have found that a marriage in which we showcase each other and cherish each other is just a much more pleasant marriage. We enjoy each other more. We love to see each other lifted up. And what we found, this sounds weird, but the more we cherish each other, the more we cherish each other. If we have that mental attitude, if we showcase each other, if we focus on each other's strengths, that shapes our heart, which makes us do more cherishing actions, which further shapes our heart. And cherishing lifts us up to a new place. You know, infatuation starts out white hot, and then it fades, and it seems like there's nothing you can do to get it back. Cherishing can be chosen, because cherishing is real, it's based on a habit, and it's based on the particular, whereas infatuation is passive, it's based on a false reality, and it fades, and you can't hold on to it. Cherishing is better than infatuation.
You know, just you were talking about, you know, letting your wife get the, you know, showcasing her. One of the things you talk about is just those little terms of endearment and how that can actually play a part in the way that we express love, or maybe even, you know, we avoid correcting harshly.
Absolutely. I would say to the guys listening, if you want your wife to feel cherished, and I get how hard this is. Please, I've been married 31 years, okay? So I am a fellow brother in this journey of marriage. Again, how hard is it? We have to retire forever. Honey, just give me the Reader's Digest version. That makes a wife feel like a nuisance. That makes a wife feel like a bother. That makes a wife feel like, okay, I'm willing to love you. I have to sit here and listen to this. I don't cherish you. I'm not curious about you. I'm not really that interested. Just please give me the shortest version so I can go out and do what I really want to do. Wives will only feel cherished if her husband maintains that curiosity. Think back to this, Neil. Why was dating so intoxicating? It's because somebody was showing interest. Well, tell me about your past. What's your opinion about this? Tell me more. And it just unlocked something in us, and we liked feeling that way. And so we end up marrying that person, and then as soon as we get married, it seems like the curiosity dies, and the cherishing dies, and then we just sort of like, why did we even decide to make this choice?
That we're talking about an important C word, cherish, and Gary just mentioned that other important C word, curious. It will make a difference in the way that you relate to your spouse, and it could be that this will get you on the road to changing everything for your marriage. We're talking about, you know, moving from surviving and maybe just sort of gritting teeth and holding on to a marriage that can not only survive but thrive when husbands and wives learn to cherish one another. A cherish, the one word that changes everything in your marriage, Gary Thomas' new book, and we've got a couple of copies to give away. I want to encourage you to sign up for that. This will be a wonderful, it'll be a great way for you to start the new year. Say, I'm going to read a marriage book to really improve the way that I relate to my spouse this year. Why not make that call right now and say, sign me up for a copy of that. I want to see 2017 the best year of my marriage yet. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. 877-93-FAITH. Gary Thomas is writer in residence and serves on the teaching team at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas. He's the author of 18 books and have sold millions worldwide. And we're talking today about his latest book, Cherish. The one word that changes everything in your marriage. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Song of Solomon. We'll also talk about some studies from John Gottman about bidding. Find out more about that in the moments ahead here on Connecting Faith.
I love you.
Talking today about cherish, the one word that can change everything for your marriage, that changes everything for your marriage. The new book from Gary Thomas, Gary's best-selling author, writer-in-residence at Second Baptist Church in Houston. He's a teaching pastor there as well, travels the world speaking and teaching, and he and his wife Lisa have been married now 31 years. Gary, the book has dives into Song of Solomon a little bit. That's a, you know, that's a book in the Bible that we appreciate being there, but we probably don't really read it a lot or understand it. But help us just how maybe taking a look at Song of Solomon, some fresh eyes could make a difference in how we can learn how to cherish our spouse.
You know, Song of Songs is often think of the book that talks about sex, which is fair. Even more, it talks about praise. It talks about verbal celebration. And I think just as 1 Corinthians 13 is known around the world as the love chapter, I bet you it is the most common verse read in weddings. In fact, the wedding I'm performing this weekend, they're going to be quoting from 1 Corinthians 13. But the Song of Songs is more about it cherish. I think, you know, 1 Corinthians 13 talks about love being gracious and altruistic, but cherish says, you know, that's about being enthusiastic and enthralled. 1 Corinthians 13 says love is quiet and understated. Song of Songs tells us that cherish boasts boldly and loudly. 1 Corinthians 13 says love thinks about others with selflessness. Cherish, according to Song of Songs, tells us that it thinks about its beloved with praise. Love doesn't want the worst for someone. It does not delight in evil. Song of Songs says cherish celebrates the best in someone. And so when you just kind of look at the different approaches, love will always be the foundation of a marriage and a relationship. I'm not at all suggesting that love, there's something lacking in love. What I'm suggesting is that cherish completes love. They're complements. The more I love my spouse, the more I'm able to cherish her. And the more I cherish her, I think I'm being true to my vow to love. It's just that focusing on cherish instead of just love raises the bar. I'm not just operating now out of duty. I'm operating out of delight. And that's something that I believe can be chosen and practiced and developed.
In the Song of Songs, of course, we read about the little foxes that can destroy the vine. And you quote studies from John Gottman about little things that can derail a marriage. He talks about bidding. Say more about that.
There's a wonderful study he did that talked about marriage masters and disasters. Those were the two categories. And he found that a lot of it could be determined by what he called catching bids. Now, catching bids is sort of like a wife or a husband is sitting down and say, "Hey, honey, do you see that bird out there?" Or, "Hey, I'm, you know, reading in a newspaper. Can I read you this article or something?" That's called a bid. Whenever a spouse addresses us, they're making a bid. And the marriage masters, they found, caught 87% of those bids. The marriage disasters only caught about 30% of the bids. And it had a huge impact on how satisfied they were on their marriage and whether their marriage would last. And I like to tell guys, it's sort of like every time a pitcher throws a ball in the major leagues, that pitch counts. It'll be scored as a ball, strike, a foul, a hit, whatever, but the pitch counts. As soon as the pitcher lets it go, that pitch counts. And the same thing is true for our wives. Now, you might think, well, boy, if I hit 300, I'm an all-star. I'm going to be rich in the major leagues, but that will be disastrous in marriage. Here's what I found that was so helpful when I talked to some husbands and wives who both had this down, because sometimes wives very much can miss their husband's bids. We may not be that interested in what our spouse is telling us, but at some point it's not about what they're saying, it's about who is saying it. A husband who nailed this talked about how he was working, his wife is in the office with him, and he's putting together a final bid. He's self-employed. It was worth about $200,000, and he just wanted to finish it up. Well, his wife was done with her work that day, and so she was on Facebook and reading something about some sort of Facebook friend that he wasn't even sure he knew. He had no interest in that friend at all. And he said, "Gary, if you were to compare me getting this $200,000 bid done and that friend, the $200,000 bid would win 100 times out of 100. He goes, "But I care about my wife more than I care about that $200,000 bid. It wasn't about what she was saying. It's about who was saying it. I had to catch that bid." And so it's just very helpful for me to realize if my spouse is going to feel cherished, when she wants to point something out, when she says something, when she speaks up, that's a bid for a happy marriage. I got to catch 9 out of 10. And I'm likely to miss 1 out of 10 just not hearing or, you know, being busy or something. And so it's just called me to a new attentiveness. And I'm a bit of a rule follower. And so I just kind of like that to say, okay, here's a bid. Gary, it's time to catch it.
Yeah, it's, you know, our schedules are all busy, but it's part of that the give and take, being fully present, isn't it? And guys, we're probably notorious for not being fully present when it comes to that.
Absolutely. And one of the things that the same husband said that was so helpful, he was taught by a teacher, he goes, you know what? You listen with your eyes, not just your ears. Somebody won't feel like they're fully being heard if you're not looking at them. So if he's at his keyboard, and I was awful at this, my wife could be talking to me and I'm still kind of halfway typing on my keyboard or halfway looking at my iPad or something and or on my phone, and I realize she doesn't feel cherished, she doesn't feel heard, if I'm also not listening with my eyes.
Good word. You know, when marriages that have missed some of those things, and maybe they're down in the sort of the 30% level as opposed to the 90% level, there's kind of a downward spiral that happens. Disappointment leads to frustration, bitterness, and then there's that sort of final step. Talk about avoiding contempt.
You know, this may be why I think cherish isn't as important as everything and why we need to talk about it. I don't think there's a status quo in marriage. By that, I mean, I don't think we get to just stay at a plateau. I found working with couples now, marriage ministry for about 2 decades, they're either ascending toward cherishing each other or descending toward contempt. And by contempt, it's really the opposite of cherish. I remember a dinner I had one time with a married couple that had been married a number of years, and he's a very quiet sort, the kind of guy who feels more at home in the world of science fiction, frankly, than in real life. But I just wanted to bring him into the conversation. And so when something came up that I thought he might have something to say, I looked and said, well, don't chefs usually think such and such? And his wife cut in with the chef. He's not a chef. He's a cook. I said, he can call me a chef. No, he can't. Chefs prepare things. You just heat things up. Well, he works in a rest home. His job is to feed 200 senior citizens every day, 3 meals a day. The budget is tight, so sadly, sometimes some meals are heated up, but he tries to do the best he can. And I'm just looking at it as an objective observer thinking, what is gained by her undercutting his life's work in one sense? Can't she see it as a noble effort that maybe with limited means, he's trying to provide a little bit of nourishment and even a little bit of tasty enjoyment for these senior citizens, a part of the public that is often ignored? But she just seemed afraid I was giving her husband more respect than he was due. And the dead-end cycle of contempt is, what did she think that's going to do for her marriage? Is she think they're going to go home that evening? And he's going to say, didn't we just have a wonderful evening here? Maybe I could give you a back rub before you go to sleep. No, he's going to feel cowed because he was silent after that. He didn't speak again that evening. And then he's going to be silent on the way home, and she's going to go to bed thinking, I have the most boring husband in the world who has this dead-end job. It doesn't make their marriage better. It doesn't make them feel closer. It doesn't encourage him because she has contempt for him rather than cherishing him. And I just want to know, why would we want to bring contempt into our marriage, particularly when an objective observer could say, you know what, it's not the most glamorous job in the world, but why wouldn't you pray that God could really do something special? Jesus fed 5,000, which is a few mean. Maybe you could pray that your husband could really become just blessed by God to provide a great dining experience for these senior citizens instead of looking at this as not worthy of respect.
So hopefully during our conversation today, you're challenged to get on that continuum toward cherish and turn around from contempt. And just to celebrate and to rejoice in our mate. We're talking the one word that can change everything in your marriage. Gary Thomas, my guest, talking cherish. Gary, you know, you talk about how cherishing can bring healing to emotional wounds. I mean, all of us have some emotional baggage. But say a bit about how this really is a healing balm.
Well, I believe cherishing is a strategy. It's what God did for us. God didn't love us because we were lovable. The Bible tells us God loved us while we were yet sinners. God loved us. And that's where we flourish, when somebody shows us grace, when somebody celebrates us, even when we don't feel like we're worthy of being celebrated. You know, and I just an example I give in the book is that, you know, we marry people that tend to be beat up. Imagine a young man, he grew up slight of stature. He developed less than other boys, and he was bullied on and picked on and whatnot. And so he got a little bit of a soft personality with a sense of he's not that secure, that upfront. And so when his wife, just in a moment of anger, flies off and says, oh, go up and be a man, it reinforces every ugly stereotype he heard growing up. What she's telling him is, you know what? What your older sibling said, what your dad said, they were right. You're pathetic. You're not even a man. You're not worth anything. She doesn't realize that's what she's saying, but he's got a history that doesn't just go away because we get married. And the counterbalance image that I use, I've done a number, about 14 marathons. And when my wife is there at the end, you know, you're as depleted as you get at the end of a marathon. I want something to drink. I want a place to lie down or at least sit down. And when Lisa brings me something to drink and a little protein, something with a little bit of salt, you know, it's like I just feel the life coming back into me. I start to become human again. I get control of everything. The fuzziness goes. And that's a great image of marriage. If you would look at it, that when your husband or your wife entered your life, they were probably beat up and they were exhausted and they've been running a long race. And your job and my job is just to basically nurture them back to life. Here's a little refreshment with my words. Here's a little nutrition with my attitudes and with my actions. And we slowly bring that spouse back to life. And it just makes sense because now you're building up the person that you're married to. They're going to be better able to cherish you. But contempt, it just seems to me like a dead-end foolish strategy. Contempt is stabbing yourself in the hand with a fork and being upset that it hurts. Because if we're one in our marriage, it makes no sense to tear part of ourselves down by tearing our spouse down. Contempt is a dead end. Cherish builds us up, and though it's a strategy to build up our spouse, it brings happiness into our own life as well.
Well, I hope that as we've listened today, we've been reminded of ways that we can take steps to help our spouse feel the life come back. Gary Thomas, I always so appreciate his insights, his writing, his speaking. He travels around the world. When he's home, he's serving on the teaching team at Second Baptist Church in Houston, Texas, where he's a writer-in-residence, author of some 18 books. His latest is called Cherish, the one word that changes everything in your marriage. Gary, God bless you. Thanks so much for coming on with us today. We so enjoy the conversation.
Thank you, Neil, for having me. I love what you're doing. It's always a joy to talk with you.
You're listening to Connecting Faith. We do have some copies, a couple copies of Gary's book to give away. So sign up for that with a phone call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-933-2484. And coming up in a moment, some more thoughts about marriage, about how we can build oneness, how we can draw closer to God and to each other. All that ahead on Connecting Faith. You're listening to Connecting Faith, and we've been talking today a little bit about how we can more effectively love and cherish our mates, and I want to focus on a little devotional that may be just what you're looking for, another little tool to draw close to your mate and to draw close to God. In fact, it is called Devoted to God and Each Other, and it is written by my guest, Dean Schussler, who has served in Honolulu, Hawaii. He's served in Sapporo, Japan, and around the Minneapolis-St. Paul area in pastoring and mission work. And he has children and grandchildren. And this is a devotional book we're going to touch on here in the next few minutes. But Dean, thank you for carving out some time. Did this, you know, writing a devotional for couples come out of your work in as a missionary, or what was the impetus for starting this?
Yes, first of all, as a missionary in Sapporo, I was director of a youth center as well as pastor of the congregation there, and so I was dealing with young people all the time. So I did pre-marriage counseling and performed marriages. Then when we relocated to this country, I've had many pre-marriage counseling opportunities, as well as performing the weddings. And when I retired the first time, I saw that as an opportunity to write the book that was waiting to be written, and it turned out to be devoted to God and each other. This is a book where the concept that I believe God has led me to is that our relationship with God and our relationship with each other has a symbiotic connection. That is, it is very close. Both of those ties are close. And what happens in one arena, you know, our faith in God, directly connects to our effectiveness in marriage and vice versa.
It is many times challenging, even among, you know, devoted believers to, you know, I guess, gather in a kind of a devotional time together, you know, maybe praying together or just sharing spiritual things together. Why is that, that we maybe find that somewhat uncomfortable or just that we don't feel confident to do that?
Well, one of the big problems is that we males, the husbands, tend to be a little nervous in talking about marriage. Mm. We'd like to just assume that we know how to make a good marriage. Women tend to be a little more relational than we, and it isn't quite as hard for them. So when I wrote the book, I was thinking often about men, and the book in many ways is anecdotal. The devotions are very short, 6 to 8 minutes each, and kind of fly under the radar, so to speak, for men so that they can weave their life story into God's design for marriage.
You know, there. This, I know, has been encouraged by others to say this is especially helpful kind of in the middle years of marriage, starting well and finishing strong, but what about the middle? So is this particularly for different seasons in the marriage, or is it valuable for the newlywed as well as the golden anniversary folks?
Right. The principles, of course, apply to any era of our lives. In the middle years, we look back to the early years for the inspiration, you know, what got us really interested in each other and taken by each other, so to speak, that we, to the point that we wanted to get married. And then in our latter years, we look back. We want to finish strong in Christ, for Christian marriages especially. And so we feed in the middle years, both on the early years as we look back and forward, as we want to finish strong in Christ and with our spouse.
The word devoted, we've been talking earlier on our program today about the word cherish, but devoted is another wonderful word. And say more about that when it comes to not only our love for God, but our love for each other.
Well, devoted is being closely loyal to somebody. And, of course, our prime loyalty is first to God and our Lord Jesus, and then to each other. And then trying to find the connection between the two is the sometimes difficult part. But it's interesting that some polls have been taken about married people who worship and have at least semi-regular devotions as couples. Guess what the results were? Okay, normally in America we say 50% of divorce rate. For Christians, that's about 40%, by the way. But those who worship and, this was a poll taken by the Billy Graham Organization, by the way, and have family or couples devotions, the divorce rate average goes down to around 5%. Which is a huge improvement, you know what I mean?
Yeah, wow.
And that's kind of a closely kept secret. If that secret were known, people would say, well, of course I'd like to have devotions. But it takes a little patience, you know, a little slowing down of the pace to spend the 10 or 15 minutes of daily or semi-daily devotions.
Was there a time of day that seemed to work naturally for you and your wife as you kind of live this out? As you said, many of these devotions are sort of anecdotal, but talk about how it worked for you, maybe what worked well and what were some of the challenges?
Well, up to the time when we were semi-retired, we would do suppers for devotions. But now that we're in semi-retirement, we do them after breakfast. And of course, that's, in a sense, ideal time-wise, because we're a little more relaxed at that time and try to give the first hours of the day to the Lord, let him have the first word, so to speak. So it helps just a whole lot.
Dean, I know that we want to be more engaged in our faith. We want to be committed to our spouse, and just think, you know, as you've had an opportunity to counsel premarital couples in your mission work and your pastoral work, is there maybe one thing that you kind of see over and over again, maybe as an indicator, say this, you know, if you don't get this right, it's going to be a problem, or if you can do this one thing, it's going to just set you so far ahead in terms of the strength and stability of your marriage?
Yeah, I'll tell you what thought came to my mind, and it was kicked off by Jesus' word. Some people call it a parable. It's kind of a semi-parable. But in Luke 11, he says, in reference to his cleaning out evil spirits in people, you know, how he would drive out those possessed problems, and Jesus said, that's fine to throw out the evil spirits, but what happens after that? And he says here in Luke 11:24, when an evil spirit comes out of a man, it goes through arid places seeking rest and does not find it. Then it says, I will return to the house I left. When it arrives, it finds the house swept clean and put in order. Then it goes and takes seven other spirits, more wicked than itself, and they go in and live there. And the final condition of that man is worse than the first. So that's something we don't want to happen, of course. But take the example of a person who's addicted, say, to alcohol or drugs. After they've become sobered up, that's wonderful. But what happens after that is equally important. And so the spiritual void that can develop after being cleansed of say, drugs, Christ needs to fill that void and his word to bring peace to the people and joy and assurance of forgiveness and all those good things. If that doesn't happen, often they have what's called dry drunk, you know, when they just are unsettled. So having devotions is the thing that helps couples to fill the void in a gentle and relatively easy way.
We recommend Devoted to God and Each Other. It's a devotional for couples. Been out for several years, but you can find it if you Google Devoted to God and Each Other. You'll find it at Amazon or Barnes & Nobles or through the publisher as well. And Dean, thank you for the work you've done in this area, and God's blessing on you as you continue to counsel and encourage others and provide reminders about our opportunity to draw close to God and to each other.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, and God bless you and your fine marriage, my brother.
Thank you. Dean, Dr. Dean Schisler served as a pastor for a number of years in the Minneapolis, in the St. Paul area, and also as a missionary in Japan, and served a pastor in Honolulu as well. And we're talking today here on Connecting Faith.
Hey, just a reminder that Dean's book, Devoted to God and Each Other, has been translated in several languages, Japanese, Portuguese, Spanish, and Chinese. They're waiting for the censors to approve it. So I want to pray about something. It would be a significant step if you get into the Chinese, get through customs and all that, as the censors kind of holding that up. So just a little area to pray about today. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith. We'll post these interviews on our show page, the Connecting Faith show page, at myfaithradio.com when the show's over.
We have another great marriage resource. We're giving away the Family Life Marriage Bible, one every week this month. Sign up for that drawing at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. Look for the Family Life Marriage Bible.
Yeah, Dennis and Barbara Rain is a great resource, and you can get a copy. Just sign up and be in the drawing for that, giving away one each week. Marriage is the topic tomorrow, too. We're going to talk strength-based marriage. Joe Bender talks to Jimmy Evans and Alan Kesley tomorrow. I encourage you to join in then for Connecting Faith.